I'll just say a few words about how to recognize affront. And I just want to explain a little bit about the dialectical process, which most Christians don't understand because we think in terms of black and white, good and evil, that if a Christian organization is giving us information that seems to be valid, that we can trust them. And I just want to explain what the dialectical process is, which is the process that's being perpetrated on the Christian community today and has been for decades. In the dialectical process, the same power elites create issues, and then they control both sides of these issues. They build a power base, they mobilize people, and they solicit funding from supporters on both sides of the issue. But only those at the top will determine the final outcome. So you have these power elites polarizing not only the society, but the church. And we can see this polarization going on in our society between right and left, between conservative and liberal. And we also see it in the churches, in the Christian community, where discord has been created. But when you really do the research and you find out who is behind all of this discord, and it takes an enormous amount of research because you have to peel away layers of deception and get at the identity of who is funding and who is putting out the propaganda. But when you do that, you find out that the same power elites are polarizing society, and this keeps the factions within our society and within the church fighting each other. And the net result is that they do not recognize the people at the top that are working both sides of the street in order to keep attention away from themselves. Now, last week I talked about the protocols of Zion. Protocol 7, if you read these protocols, you will be amazed at how they have come to pass. But Protocol 7 says, throughout all Europe and by means of relations with Europe, in other continents also, we must create ferments, discords, and hostility. Therein we gain a double advantage. So the power elites set up controlled opposition fronts in order to bring about revolution. And I found a good definition of a controlled opposition front. Listen to this. The way to wield supreme power in any situation is not to stamp out all opposition. This would only create pressure that would eventually explode. What is needed is to allow for an opposition which you can control. And if this opposition believes that it is independent, that's even better, for it will attack the ruling power and lead the people to believe that the power is tolerating dissent. So most Christians understand that we're in the last days, that there is deception going on, that the government is evil, whether you thought the Clinton administration was evil or you believe now that the Bush administration is evil. You begin to see Bible prophecy being fulfilled. You know that things are not right in the government. And so you look for some kind of group to join that is explaining what is going on. It's almost a frightening situation that we're in. But the problem is that these power elites have set up controlled opposition fronts. These are opposition groups that their job is to collect the Christians who sense that something is wrong and would form their own opposition if they were left to themselves. So they set up fronts to control them. And one of these times, I'd like to talk about the John Birch Society and the Council for National Policy, because these were kind of the genesis of the whole array of fronts in the Christian right today. And then to, of course, many Christians sense that these groups are apostate. So what the power elites have done is to set up opposition groups to oppose them. But they control not only the right-wing apostasy that's going on, they control the opposition to it. And I'd like to just go over a few points on how to recognize fronts for controlling the opposition. Because as Kelly said, their objective is to create discord. And I agree with Kelly. Their objective even is to bring about revolution.
And to turn our names in, to be then to pick us up and take us to the Coliseums, if need be.
Exactly. And that's what I think the John Birch Society and the Council for National Policy were all about. They were intelligence fronts. They were collecting data, databasing right-wing conservative Christians. And I believe they're still doing it today. But these are just some of the points that I have. These are what I look for when I'm evaluating a ministry or an organization. First of all, I look to see if they have an intelligence background or a military background, because there is a whole network, intelligence network, that is abroad, controlling the churches. They're out on the internet. It is immense, the intelligence network that is databasing, that is controlling our thoughts, that is controlling the information that we receive. And they are giving, in many instances, right information, but they're also withholding information from us. The second thing I look for is any connections with the New Age, with the New World Order. And I also look at their sources of funding, because we all know that whoever pays the piper calls the tunes. Number three, I look at what they are not saying, what they are not exposing. Many of these front groups will expose many things. They will speak about the New World Order and about the Illuminati and about the United Nations, but they will not touch the secret societies. They will not expose Freemasonry. They will not expose the Rosicrucians. They will not expose the Priori de Sion or the Merovingian bloodline. If they are asked about these, they will say they are non-existent or they're insignificant, or they will give false information about these secret societies.
Let me hear it over there.
Number four, I look at what an organization or a ministry excuses. When they are confronted with some information that maybe they're not exposing, they will excuse that group or that movement. They will excuse people who are collaborating with known apostates. They will excuse people in the Council for National Policy. They will excuse people that are associated with known heretics, such as Sun Myung Moon. Be careful that you look at what they're excusing, as well as what they are not saying and what they are saying. Another thing that front groups do is they do a kind of a mind bend. They will say that because God is fulfilling prophecy in a certain way, say through the Zionist movement or through something that is associated with the Antichrist. Of course, we know the Antichrist is in Bible prophecy. But because God is fulfilling prophecy through this movement, which may be an Antichrist movement, that Christians should support it. This is wrong. Christians are to be bearing good fruit. They are not to have fellowship with the evil works of darkness, but they are to reprove them. And they should remember that if they are having fellowship with the evil fruits of darkness, just because they're part of the fulfillment of Bible prophecy, they are also leading people astray. Because as we all know, that the Antichrist will require everyone to receive a mark and to worship an image to the beast, and that those who receive the mark will be condemned by God. So long after Christians are gone, what they do with these apostates is going to last in the minds of people who are still on earth during the tribulation period. So we have to be very careful that we do not allow these front groups to bend our minds, bend our thinking in this way. Front groups also give out misinformation, which is incorrect information. They promote heresy. They promote forbidden practices such as astrology. Many times they do this very subtly. They may talk about biblical astrology, which of course is still astrology, and there's nothing biblical about it. They may subtly promote Gnosticism. We have found a curious phenomenon that people who promote these heresies, Bible codes, the astrology, they will deny what they are actually teaching. I know in D. James Kennedy's book on the Gospel and the Stars, The True Meaning of the Zodiac, he has a whole chapter denying that he is promoting astrology. He even condemns the practice of astrology, but then he goes on throughout the book to use astrology to present a false gospel. And then he has the audacity to claim that these signs, these astrological signs, these beasts and four-footed creatures of the zodiac are representative of Jesus Christ. It's a blasphemous book, but in this book, he starts out by denying that he is doing what he is actually doing. Okay, the seventh thing I look for is disinformation, deliberately misleading information. Now, there are three things that people going into the tribulation period need to know. As a matter of spiritual survival, they need to know the identity of the Antichrist, they will need to know the identity of the false prophet, and they will need to know the mark of the beast. If they are deceived on any one of these key prophecies in Scripture, the identity of these things, their salvation is at stake. So, a ministry or an organization may be giving out tons of good information, keeping you up to date on what's happening in the news, and interpreting in terms of Bible prophecy. But if they are misleading you on these three key parts of Bible prophecy, that may be their only purpose, to lead you astray on these key personages within Bible prophecy. And the last thing I look for is agitation propaganda. Agitation propaganda is any form of media that tries to influence opinion for political or other ends. But it also aims to convince people through agitating their minds with highly emotional language of problems in present-day society or politics, which may or may not exist. Now, I want to give you just one example of agitprop. agitation propaganda. We all know about the depleted uranium. But I found this in the newsletter of a very popular organization, a ministry that is followed by many Christians. If American families of returning veterans ever understood that Bush and Rumsfeld deliberately sent their sons, husbands, fathers, and daughters to die in depleted uranium-infested battlefield areas, millions of marchers would descend upon Washington, D.C., demanding the scalp of every government leader who had a hand in this debacle. Now, here, this organization, which puts out a lot of good information, but in this case, and I've noticed it in other cases, they are agitating. They are fomenting revolution. They are pushing Christians to the point where some Christians, some who of their followers, will actually join in the revolution that is being fomented by these controlled opposition fronts. If you look at the whole array of organizations that is exposing the New World Order, many of them are fomenting revolution. They are saying, if we just get together, if we use guns, we can save America. And this is a totally anti-Christian idea. This is just what the power elites at the top want. They want the Christians to take part in a revolution so that then they can use our names, which are, of course, databased by now. They can round up the Christians, and they will have a legal reason for putting Christians to death, and we would be playing right into their hands. So that's what I had on how to recognize a controlled opposition front. At some point, I'd like to go into the John Birch Society and the Council for National Policy as prototypes of these controlled opposition.
Barbara, what? Definitely, it's not the job of born again Christians to aid and abet and be a part of and be led astray and led into a revolutionary war where then other Christians across the country can be arrested and killed. What is the job of the tribulation saints? What has God called us to do? And is it to, it's not to bear arms? And what are you seeing that it's going to be the job of, and what are Christians to do during these days?
Well, right now, we're to be exposing this. We are to be a peaceful people. When the soldier asked Jesus what he should do, Jesus said, "Do violence to no man." We are not to take up arms against our government. We are even to pay taxes. The job of the church is to preach the gospel. And in the early church, when the persecutions were so terrible, never once did Paul or any of the apostles, or even if we recall the words of Jesus, never once did he talk about physical opposition to the authorities, but rather winning them to Christ, even if it means our death.
As a matter of fact, the death would help people wake up and see what's happening, and more we get saved. So, and that's just exactly what happened. It's always happened. Before reading your stuff, we've got a storm coming. I hope it doesn't hit all the equipment. All that lightning striking around us. But one of the things, all your wonderful intelligence background and military background, these are wonderful. This is fabulous because it definitely helps us see. But one of the things I started noticing, because I've given a lot of money to focus on the family research over the years, 20 years. What I started noticing in the last few years was that, number one, that they were not exposing all the truth. And what I saw was the big thing was that they were not exposing the fact that the partial birth abortion, here they've been pro-life all these years, yet they didn't. I read the bill, and it was not a pro-life bill. It said to kill children at the navel. And that focus on the family and this group, that none of these groups were exposing that, even after I would call them. So that was a big red flag. And then they started pushing the marriage amendment, which anybody has any first grade knowledge of our Constitution and of law, our government, for our Congress to defy marriage would destroy marriage. And not only that, George Bush's Marriage Defense Act was going to allow for civil unions. So it was going to, in a sense, help sodomite marriage come into being. And all these same groups were pushing that. And the third thing that just took me off the edge was their promotion of the passion. And I said, that's it now. That, you know, I'm able to, these people are exposed by, number one, what they're not telling us, and then what they are pushing, for sure. And the, such as James D. Kennedy, you were talking about him just a few minutes ago on his book that he brought out, James Kennedy, and how his unbelievable connection with EE, Evangelism Explosion, and but what he's getting ready to do here in this next week is he's going to start teaching the true history, Christian heritage of our country. Well, someone called me yesterday, people, you know, Kelly, we have a Christian country. I said, they were Freemasons that found this country. I think that's been propaganda all along by most of these front groups that we have a Christian country. What do you think?
Yes.
And James Kennedy's getting ready to have a big, you know, 60,000 people group, and he's going to teach the true Christian heritage of America with David Barton and all the other CMPers.
Well, we have an expose of the founding fathers on our website, and the fact that they were deists and theists. Thomas Paine, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington. There is a huge museum in Arlington, Virginia, dedicated to George Washington, who was a Freemason.
He was Grand Marshal of his Freemason place while he was president.
Yes. But this is what is being promoted: the idea that this is a Christian nation, and that where these Freemasons are leading the nation is back to the Christian foundations, which is nothing more than Freemasonic.
Freemasonic. Yeah, instead of Christian heritage, it's just a Mason heritage.
That's right.
And we have a Mason heritage. We have a Mason religion being put into place in this country is what we had.
Yeah.
And they let it be, but they purposely allowed it to be destroyed. Part of the dual dialectic is destroying marriage so you have a crisis. The other side can then use it to say, give us your money and we'll help protect marriage. And so you have that dual conspiracy going there.
Yes, and with this marriage amendment, Christians are being told, well, we have to compromise. We have to change the language of this amendment so that we can get it passed. But what it does is to allow homosexual unions under another name.
Well, we don't need a marriage amendment because we already have 200 years of laws that say marriage between a man and a wife. We just need someone to enforce the law, and they won't do it. We did have a law put in place during the Clinton administration, which was the Defense of Marriage Act, but George Bush wouldn't enforce that law. See, that's another thing, is when they pretend that there's a crisis, they create this crisis, such as the war on drugs, or now this new crisis of amphetamines or whatever that their people are making and blowing themselves up at their house. Now I have to register when I buy a cold remedy.
Yes, and we had the same thing going on with stem cell research.
Right.
George Bush's policy is more liberal than Clinton's policy was, but we had all of
all the pro-life groups telling us what a wonderful pro-lifer he was.
Yes.
The whole time he's a pro-abortionist.
Yes, talk about a mind bend.
Right. And the thing is the problem is that most Christians today's mind can bend, and they bend it to and fro. They toss these people to and fro. They're claiming that Bush is a Christian and that he's pro-life, and yet he's not pro-life. He doesn't have a pro-life bone in his body. Anyways, it is a mind bend. So this is very good. I'll tell you, that's how the groups were being exposed to be by now what they are not exposing, such as John Lofton never exposed that he worked with Mooney for 12 years. Well, that was a big red flag.
And it should be.
Yeah, and not only that, he worked with Rush Dooney. He's worked with all these Dominionists. So that was a big flag. And so I went, whoa, these people cannot be trusted. The whole people behind the Constitution Party. What is interesting to me is through your book, The Next Revolution, is the connections with all of these people and their bloodlines, such as go through some of the bloodlines of Phyllis Schlafly and Pat Robertson and Pat Buchanan, and their bloodlines are pretty amazing. And the head of the started John Birch Society.
That's true. In many cases, we're able to identify that certain people are members of this Merovingian bloodline. And not in all cases. And in many times, you know, they've changed their names. It's hard to see. But that's what's been so amazing to us and really has validated our research on the Merovingian conspiracy.
What about just, go ahead, we got Catherine online from Arizona. Go ahead, Catherine.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Kelly.
Sure,
hello.
Catherine, great to hear from you. Go ahead.
Pardon?
Go ahead, good to hear from you.
Same here. Barbara,
yes.
I want to thank you for your website. It is very extensive, and I have been blown away by the information that I have read therein. One of the things that I have learned when you talk about all of these front groups, I tell people if the masses are flocking in one direction, it is always wise to go the other way.
Yeah, don't lead a don't follow a multitude to do evil.
Right, and I have one more question for you. Do you have all of this on CD, all your website?
You can download the entire website from the homepage.
Okay.
Right at the top, we have a link that says download website.
Okay, and you're going to just download that into my computer?
Yes, and you
can. And have you written any books?
No, I haven't. I have.
Most of her information is a book.
Well,
a bunch
yeah,
of little books,
so.
For sure.
I have thought of taking some of the reports and making a book, but it's time-consuming to do that. I don't really have a staff that works for me, so I'd have to take time away from the research that I'm doing now, and it seems like the Lord is always showing me new things. I'm always doing new research, so I just don't have a published book.
Okay.
Well, we want you to keep doing the new research. That's what we want to keep it.
Yeah, I've actually started doing printing out portions of your website and starting my own little book so that I can just sit and read.
And then hand them out to people. Like,
yeah.
There are many that I've been able to do. So,
well, there's not too many of us out there that are dedicated to telling the truth. And I know that Kelly has been attacked on several fronts. And so that tells me that what she's doing is the truth. Otherwise, they wouldn't touch her with a 10-foot pole. So I really want to thank you. The information is very thorough, and it is very helpful. I was reading some things to my husband. He's like, you know, we were going through symbols of the Masonic symbols and all of that you have on your website, and he was like going, oh, my gosh, I recognize that. And I said, yeah. So now we actually pay attention to everything that we do. We look at, you know, we look at symbols. We look at numbers attached to a business. And do we really want to shop here? And do we really want to support any of these types of businesses? And it's because of ministries like yours, ministries like Kelly's, that has actually helped us open up our eyes. And we just want to thank you, Barbara, and we pray for you.
Mm. Thanks, Kat.
Well, thank you.
And keep up the great work.
All right, Kat. Thank you. God bless. We got someone on Bill from South Carolina. Go ahead, Bill.
Good afternoon, Kelly.
Good afternoon.
I have a question for Barbara.
Okay.
I'd like her perspective.
Okay, let me just put out the phone number. Anybody else? We have a little bit more time for phone calls. The number is 866, the numeral 2, retake, 866-273-8253. Go ahead, Bill.
Thank you. If America was not going to be founded as a Christian nation, then why did the people leave England to begin with?
Then could you repeat that?
I'll repeat it to help you hear it. If they didn't leave to form a Christian country, why did they leave England to begin with?
Correct.
My own feeling about this is you had the the Mayflower come over. I believe James the First of England commissioned that. I believe this was a Christian group that came over.
Supposedly they're Puritans and Dominionists. I'm not sure.
Okay. Kelly?
Yes.
I'm having a hard time hearing Barbara.
Okay. So you hang up and you can listen to the answer?
That'll work.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right, Bill. Thank you. Okay, Barbara. Go ahead, Barbara.
Okay. So that was in the 1500s.
Well, now, wasn't the founding of our country maybe a Freemason out of England, the Brits, say, okay, go over and conquer that land for us? Because they were conquering land all over the whole world.
Well, this is true. I believe Christopher Columbus was funded by these people. But there were Christians over here. Now, what happened in the 1700s with the Revolution and the Founding Fathers? This, in my mind, was a revolution. It was a taking over of the United States by a Masonic cabal.
Well, I think a lot of people left because of Christian persecution, and then England wanted to come over here and control that group of people. Yes.
Yes.
And then the Revolutionary
yes.
War was definitely an Illuminati war.
Exactly. Exactly. So.
And I've done some shows on that, on our Founding Fathers and how it all came about. We'll go over those on Thursday and Friday. In more in debt. Okay, Barbara. But I think a lot of people came here religious persecution over here to a country. Wasn't conquered yet, but England was out conquering countries. The Commonwealth of England is scattered all across the world.
Yes,
and that's the Freemasons. They're out there controlling the world.
Yes, and when we talk about the Founding Fathers, they of course were Freemasons and deists and theists, but that there were many Christians in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that happened to our country was not their doing. They were probably deceived, like many of us have been at times. And, you know, these secret societies are very powerful, very well networked, and they're experts in revolution. And that's what I think happened here.
And I think the Great Awakening might have slowed down the workings of the secret societies.
True.
Supposedly a lot of them came out of the secret societies during the Great Awakening times and exposed Freemasonry for what it was. Give an example of one person, member of a Council for National Policy, or John Birch Society person. Larry Pratt, I thought you had a lot of information about him. Maybe you have someone else in your mind like Weyrich or Pat Buchanan. Just give us an example of that person, their bloodline, and what they've done and what they're doing now. Just take one of them that your favorite one.
You want a bloodline person, someone I know whose bloodline?
Okay.
Or just anybody.
Just anybody you think's got is a great example to show this connection.
Okay. J. Peter Grace was a major figure.
Okay.
The John Birch Society was founded in 1958. When Robert Welch died, Larry McDonald, the congressman, founded an intelligence organization for the John Birch Society. It was called Western Goals Foundation. And J. Peter Grace was a major figure in this Western Goals. Now, what it was an intelligence operation that was collecting data on citizens throughout the United States. And J. Peter Grace was the chairman of the Order of the Knights of Malta in the United States. He was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was the president of W.R. Grace and Company, which was 30% owned by Germany's Flick Financial Group. The Flick Group funded the Nazi Party's rise to power in pre-war Germany. In addition, Grace was a close associate of Otto Ambrose of Germany's IG Farben, which was the developer of the Zyklon Zyklon B glass used in the concentration camps. Now, J. Peter Grace was a major figure in the Western Goals operation of the John Birch Society, and he was also one of the founding board members of the Council for National Policy. And here we have this man with immense connections to the Nazi network. In fact, J. Peter Grace was responsible for Project Paperclip, and that was a post-World War II CIA project to bring over the Nazi network from Germany and those surrounding countries. These are Nazis who had committed war crimes, who were seeking immunity from prosecution. And J. Peter Grace, who sat on the board of the Council for National Policy and also on the Western Goals Foundation of the John Birch Society, was instrumental in getting this Nazi network over to the United States. He worked with Reinhard Gehlen, who was Hitler's chief intelligence officer, solely in charge of espionage against the Soviet Union. So here we have the head of the Knights of Malta working with the Nazi network, bringing them over to the United States, sitting on the boards of Western Goals, Foundation of the John Birch Society, and the Council for National Policy. I could say more of that.
That's just, we've got a few more minutes. You want to go on about him? I thought and I'm not sure if you have all the information in front of you. I just thought the Pat Buchanan was very interesting, and Larry Pratt. A lot of people, our listeners in our area, would know Tom DeWeese, Don McIlvaney, and Larry Pratt. These are people who are out there much in the patriot movements now.
Yes.
Their backgrounds are pretty amazing.
There are a number of Council for National Policy members. The Council for National Policy is a consortium of about 500 heads of, these are globalists. They're very powerful people, power elites. There are many connected with Sun Myung Moon's Unification Church. They all head up fronts for various secret societies and cults. And mixing in with them are many, if not most, of the leaders of the Christian right, Pat Robertson, James Dobson, Donald Wildman, you name it, D. James Kennedy. If a person is, if a man is a Phyllis Schlafly is another one. These heads of the Christian right are forming policy for the Christian right in this Council for National Policy, where they are collaborating with globalists. And if Christians only knew about this Council for National Policy, they would not follow Pat Robertson, D. James Kennedy, James Dobson. If they knew what they were doing, of course the Council for National Policy is very secretive. And you mentioned Pat Buchanan and Larry Pratt and Phyllis Schlafly. We have an entire report on our website about the Council for National Policy, databasing many of these past and present members and officers. It's just too great to go into now.
Yeah, it's way too great to go into. Well, your webpage, folks, you need to go to Barbara Aho's webpage. It's www.watch-unto-prayer.org, watchuntoprayer.org. She said you can download her whole webpage into your computer so you have it with you at all times, if you got a laptop or whatnot, so you can read it if you don't want to print it all out. It's a lot of printing. It's just the amount of information is mind-boggling. She's, as I told you, her information has turned my world upside down enough. We're going to change the name of the show, and we're going about life as a different... once you're confronted with truth, as true Christians who have filled with the Holy Spirit, when you're confronted with truth, you change what you're doing, and life is no more the same as it ever was before. And that's one of the ways you can tell a true Christian who hears the truth, understands it, and then changes if it affects them. That's why a lot of people don't want to know the truth, because it requires a change of behavior, a change of actions. And Barbara, I just appreciate you. We'd like to have you on so many more times. We'll try to get you on quite regularly, especially when you have, when you're researching and your new information that helps expose these people a little bit more. But I appreciate you. I appreciate all the time you've been on my show in the past 2 weeks. Folks, we have our whole, this whole series. We'll send it to you. We'll send you a copy of it, okay, Barbara?
Yes.
For free, and we'll, so you can have a copy that you also could sell or to give out if you'd like, okay?
And thank you for having me on, Kelly.
All right,
I'd love to come on again.
Oh, well, all the time, okay, Barbara?
Okay.
God bless. Appreciate you just helping our eyes to hear. He who has eyes to see and ears to hear.